Welcome to another episode of Small School Big Tech. This is Danny Silva along with
Andrew Schwab.
And that would be I Teach Ag on Twitter and
another Schwab on Twitter.
I know how you love to pimp out your Twitter handle.
Yeah, well, it's a new year, so why not?
It is a new year, and that means it's the end of the old year. And so, been doing some housekeeping at school a little bit and getting ready for the kids to come back. And what are we doing right now?
Setting up two carts full of netbooks.
80 netbooks, and we're using Jim Klein's famous UberMix, right?
Yeah, we're using a 0.711.
And what? But you installed something extra on them. It starts with an O.
It's called Ofris.
And what is that going to do for us?
It's basically like deep freeze. So it'll freeze the system. And any changes that students make, if you reboot, will be reset. Which is different from just playing UberMix, which allows you to do a restore of the machine. Ofris actually will just freeze the system so that you don't have to do a full restore. So we'll see. I'm going to try it. We'll see how it works.
Which will be good because my kids love to change the desktop background and put something.
Well, it's your fault I went out looking for this just because of that. Because when you look at your computers that are running UberMix right now, I think they all have a different desktop.
They've all been messed around with quite a bit. They changed the icons. Some of the icons are about half the size of the screen. They're that large.
So I suppose I could have went about it a different way by just denying them access to do that. But this will actually cover a whole bunch of other stuff as well. They're still going to have root to the device. So it'll be interesting to see if we find any students that figure out how to turn it off. but it is a pretty obscure program. So,
well, the student we find that knows how to do that, then that we get them in your class.
Yeah, that would be good.
And then he can help you do a lot of stuff.
Yep. So anyway, we got, I imaged 78, it was only a couple hours. It wasn't that bad. I did six at a time with six different USB keys. And now I think we spent more time putting the carts together and plugging in the power supplies than I did imaging the machines.
Oh, we're still not done.
No, we're still not done.
We got to put the machines in them.
Still have to put the machines in the carts. And it's just a process. Like, we figured out today that we probably want the carts to go in with the power port out, just so the teachers don't rip the
power cords are got an L bracket or L male connector, input connector, and so if you were to pull the laptop out and forget it was plugged in, you could actually snap either the plug or snap the connector on the motherboard, which would be even worse.
Yeah. So.
So if they're in the front, then you see to remember to take it off first.
Yeah, and I think we're going to zip tie them down, so they have to take them off before they can take
actually
it out.
So you actually have to place the netbook in before you can plug it in.
Yeah. So anyway, little stuff like that, which has always been an issue for me when we talk about notebook carts, laptop carts. I've never been a big fan of laptop carts, mostly because when I first got here to LeGrand, there was a notebook cart, a 24 notebook cart in the library.
It was destroyed constantly, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, keeping that thing up and running was a big challenge. And, back then, I think the batteries on those things were lasting like 2 to 3 hours. So they were constantly in and out of the cart, being plugged in and whatnot. And, cable management inside a cart, although if we had looked at the directions beforehand, the cable management for this cart system is actually pretty good, and they provided a whole bunch of zip ties. My only thing about zip ties, though, is that kind of locks you in, especially, let's say, we just have a power supply go bad or something. Getting it out of there can be a challenge. So we're going to zip tie the front end in a couple key places, but really not kind of lock ourselves in with zip tying the whole back side of it, even though it might look prettier. I think the way we're doing it, it'll be easier to pull something out if we have to.
Yeah.
And so we'll get those in. Hopefully tomorrow we will finish that. And then we'll bring the teachers that are going to have them in their classroom, bring them in and just give them a walk them through how to safely take devices in and out, proper procedures for charging and all that stuff. We'll probably get about 6 hours out of these things during through the day, so I'm hoping through maybe sleeping and lunch break. We really don't have the same kind of breaks that you'd see in an elementary school, so we don't have a lot of downtime during the day, so we'll see how they do throughout the day in the class.
Hopefully they'll last long enough to make the day without being have to be put back in to recharge.
I mean, I might, you know, we might end up buying chargers and putting them on power strips and charging certain ones throughout the day in the rows or something, like we kind of talked about as an alternative. So we'll just see. We'll play it by ear. It's kind of an experiment.
A big experiment. At least it's a relatively, for the cost, a relatively cheap but hopefully worthwhile one.
Well, let's see. Your pilot was 20 plus, so this would be four times as many?
Four times that.
And we're not taking them home. I think we didn't run into these issues when we ran yours because the students were responsible for charging them themselves.
Yep.
We didn't have to deal with cart storage or security or any of that stuff because the student was responsible again. So, you know, I like the idea of netbooks and I like the idea of one-on-one. I'm really not a big fan of netbooks dedicated into a classroom. Well, just, you know, it's like having a class set of books versus having a kid responsible for the book themselves, right?
Yes.
The class set, they've got to put them back, they've got to take them out. There's this time involved with getting stuff out and ready. It's got to be ready for the next group of kids to come in. So there's this whole process and procedure that you have to work out. And we're going to have to work out the same thing because we are basically sharing, you know, in one class, 36 netbooks. Each student is basically time sharing that netbook with five other students, right? So it's, yes, it's just a different, it's different than having a, here's your netbook, you're responsible for it, now go and, you know,
go
learn.
Go do it.
Yeah. So, anyway, yeah.
We'll see how it works out.
Big experiment. We'll keep you posted.
And being that's the end of the year, I'm sure you've all seen the total amount of lists, the best of, the worst of lists all over the place, how-to lists. And my favorite website, of course, Lifehacker, has 10 zillion of them.
Yeah, I was going down some
from
of those, yeah.
What's kind of nice, because it reminds you of some of the stuff that you might want it to do but have forgotten. If you know of some of the better ones and you want to share, post them online, leave us a comment.
Are you soliciting people to participate with us?
I am asking people to
Dude, talk first off, nobody listens. And second,
Zeitgeist.
Even if they do, what was that? Even if they do, they're not interested in talking back to us. That's my opinion. That's what I've seen. our listeners may be happy to listen to us.
I think that's a throwdown. Well, and that leads me to a very cool video that I found. It actually was leaked a little early before the website was up, and then it got taken down, and then it got put back up. And I had I just put it into Google Translate from English to English so I could listen and see how
Zeitgeist.
See how it was pronounced.
Zeitgeist.
Yeah, I was going
to. Never heard of the Zeitgeist?
I was going to say it differently.
So, you grew up in the Central Valley.
It's Google Zeitgeist, and it's their year in review. Got some really cool things, really cool video. They looks like they spent a lot of time on it, but of course, because I'm the Google fanboy that I am, the part that I found the coolest was how they incorporated a lot of their new tools into the video, like Google Instant and Google Earth and Google Maps and a lot of other different. And so watch it a couple times. Watch it once for the actual information and the year in review, which is a lot of cool stuff and a lot of interesting stuff. But watch it again and watch for the Google tools and how they're being used together. I thought it was really cool. They did a good job with it.
From Wikipedia, Zeitgeist is the spirit of the times or the spirit of the age, the general cultural, intellectual, ethical, spiritual, or political climate within a nation or even specific groups. So, there you go.
Okay, well, you have to put that up on the show notes as well then.
All right.
And with the end of the year, of course, it's not only is it a time to review and reflect, but it's also got time to plan. And so we're planning ahead with our netbook carts, but it's also when people set their New Year's resolutions, and usually most people have some kind of fitness goal. And
now is not the time to go join a gym. Let me no. just say that. Wait till March when everybody quits and they have lots of specials.
There you go. But
you can make your resolution now.
There's lots of stuff online, of course. One of the things that's up, I think, now till the end of January, if you're interested and you have an iPhone.
Is it that long? Why was I in such a hurry? I felt like I should be in such a hurry.
RunKeeper Pro is free through January, normally $10.
Okay, so this is me, right? I saw the link. It said free. I said, ooh. So I jumped on and I got it. What the heck does it do?
It tracks your movements. It tracks your workouts. It tweets and tells people how much you've ran and how fast you did it in.
So it's basically spying on me.
In one way, I have another app that I've used also, and it was one of the light apps, so it didn't have all the cool features. But being able to tweet out that you're doing something and being able to do it once in a while, in one way, is a motivational way.
Mm-hmm.
To help keep you motivated to
keep you
going.
Doing it.
Because yeah. Now if you've done it 3-4 times and then all of a sudden you stop for a while, people are like, hey, you stopped working out, huh?
So peer pressure?
Peer pressure helps out a lot for some people.
Okay.
All
right, never mind. Don't follow me on Twitter if you're going to pressure me into doing running.
I've also come across this cool new website. It's from former Googlers, but as Andrew says, once a Googler, always a Googler.
Well, isn't that right?
I guess.
Come on, man.
The website is called gainfitness.com, and it's still up in alpha, I believe. Yeah,
it's definitely not prime time.
It's still considered alpha. There's still some links that they don't even have linked yet. Plan, analyze, connect, they don't have set up. But what I thought was cool was they have this quick workout. You tell it how long you have. You tell it if you're going to be in a gym or you're at home. You tell it what your goal is, health and longevity, fat loss or muscle. And you tell it, what do you want to concentrate on? Full body, upper body, abs, whatever. And you say, build the workout. And it builds a workout for you to fit those 30 minutes.
Yeah, that part was pretty neat.
And
I wasn't a big fan of the tools.
Oh, yeah, the tools are, if you're...
the BMI calculator.
If you're into that kind of stuff, BMI and body fat
percentage.
I
think I broke it. I don't think the numbers are supposed to go that high.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad. They have some other ones. Weight chart, calorie burn, and exercise equipment that aren't set up
yet. They're not on yet.
But I just the quick workout is going to, I think, going to be helpful for me because they also give you the options to tell what equipment you might have so you can use certain equipment and leave out other equipment.
Dude, I thought you were going for P90X, man. What happened?
Well, I got to get started somehow. I did 3.5 miles on the elliptical the other day in 30 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and then I got sick and I got a sinus infection, so I haven't worked out for a week and a half.
See, and my philosophy is the sinus infection is your body's way of telling you stop working out.
My mother-in-law said something like that. Is look at all these healthy people that just drop dead dying while they're running.
It's true.
So, but I need to lose some weight. That holiday extra poundage comes on.
Well, I was really good. I limited myself during the holidays.
And then,
but you know what? I actually like this because it gives you the charts and the whole body position thing anyway. I find that just watching the P90X videos, I get tired.
And
yeah, just
you
watching
out.
those exercises and how they're doing it makes me tired. But.
And then there's another website if you want some positive peer reinforcement, I guess you might say, instead of peer pressure. A fellow Twitter person. Teach42 has set up a website. It's called Fit42 Challenge, and they're actually giving, I believe...
They were giving something away.
They're giving a TV away.
Ooh, that's what I need.
It's another a 30-day challenge, and check it out. It's called Fit42, or the Fit42 Challenge. We put the link in the show notes. It's kind of like social media meets health and fitness in a way. Which is kind of cool.
Actually, it looked like a computer, but an all-in-one M90Z desktop computer.
Oh, that's what it is. It's one of those fancy...
So what do you have to do exactly? Is this like The Biggest Loser?
I think it's kind of a you have to post, and I haven't read all the everything yet.
Oh.
Because I have not yet site done activity, anything. So you have to do activity. It's a little bit like Foursquare, I think, in a way.
Achievements. It has achievements.
Yeah. You have
achievements,
get more badges and stuff, and you get badges.
You know what? I want a sash like where I can put all my digital badges. That's what I want.
It's called your iPhone.
But they're not all in one place. Would somebody please make an app that's like a badge sash app that I can put all my badge.
You can have it as your my badges. Home screen, right?
I want my badges.
But speaking of fitness, we haven't really talked about, we talked a little bit about school with our laptop carts, but how could you add technology into PE? And one way would be through mobile education, mobiles in education, and that would be iPhone apps like your Runkeeper Pro we talked about.
Wait, I sense a Google something coming.
Actually,
something's coming.
We could go Google, but mobile in education, I mean, you could just do that with anything, right?
Yes, but I know something. It's on the tip of your tongue.
Mr. Robo, some of you might be familiar with from Twitter. He's a PE teacher in Australia or New Zealand. I'm sorry, Mr. Robo.
They have to teach PE there? I thought they're all just like fit.
Well, what's cool is they're doing just more than PE. They're actually teaching health and fitness and
maybe
science.
That's why they're all so healthy and fit, and, because they teach it in their schools.
They teach it, huh?
Wow.
And he's using his iPhone with Google.
Ah, I knew it was coming.
Yep, Google, a Google spreadsheet. And he sets up the spreadsheet ahead of time. He goes out and he has his students do their exercises, and they take blood pressure readings and heart rate readings during, after, before, they're all the fitness activities. They come give him their readouts or their data. He plugs it into the spreadsheet for them, which you could actually have them plug it into their own in their own phone if you wanted to.
If they had one.
It's tied back to, he set up a graph to go along with that spreadsheet, and it's back in the room already up on a monitor or a projector. And as soon as the students and him get back from their exercising and their data, gathering their data, they're able to quickly look at their chart and then analyze the data very quickly. So I thought that was really cool. Put the link up in the show notes. He does a lot of really cool stuff with physical education and technology. He has a Wii program there, lots of other things.
Oh, he was first runner-up in the 2010 EduBlog Awards, Best Teacher Blog.
Yep.
Cool.
So he really put some good stuff out there. Check out his website. Check out his stuff on technology.
He is Mr. Robot, the PE Geek.
Yep.
It is thepegeek.com. Neat.
So,
I'll have to check this out some more. Who knew technology went with PE? I did not.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, what do we got up next?
Well, speaking of cell phones in school.
Oh, we were talking about phones.
Are you allowing cell phones in campus? Not you. I know you do, but I'm talking
what,
to
what?
You.
What? I
the,
do?
You, what are you the public. About? Do you guys.
Does our principal listen to this? No, I do not allow cell phones in my class.
Of course we do. So I put three links up there: cell phones in learning, Project Mobilize, and a YouTube video. And the YouTube video is the most, I don't know how he got this award. I'd like to know how they did this. But he received the Most Innovative Teacher in the World Award. And he's speaking on using cell phones in...
The Most Innovative Teacher in the World Award. That sounds like something you kind of make up and then give yourself.
Yeah, I don't know. He's from New Zealand.
Oh, New Zealand again. What's with all the...
I don't know. There's just something I found. They're into cell phones and... Education.
Yes. I think you're focused on that part of the world for another reason, which we won't discuss right now. But okay, so I'm curious to know, because actually this is a discussion that I've heard more and more people talking about, which is where is, you know, do cell phones have a place on campus? Do they have a place in the classroom? I think certainly it's technology that students are familiar with, know how to use, and why aren't we embracing it in school?
Well... And I have to look back at this video. I watched the video, and I need to watch it again. But one thing that stands out in my head about the video, he's basically talking. It looks like he's at a diner or a coffee shop or something, just talking to this guy. It looks like he's at a restaurant. But one thing that stood out was he made a comment, something like, to students, cell phones are toys, and why not let them have their toys in education?
Because toys have no place in education. What are you, crazy?
Yeah.
I don't even know if they see them as toys. I think they're just... It's like we carry around a set of keys. They carry around a cell phone.
That too.
You know what I mean?
But for some people, they're toys.
Well, because when I think toy, though, I think I'm going to play with it. And,
what do our kids do in class?
But I don't see them playing. They're texting. They're communicating. They're sharing. They're updating their Facebook status. It's not...
I do see
it. So I take issue with the toy. I don't know that it's a toy, per se. It could... You know, even if it's got games on it, I don't 100% know that they see it as a toy. I think it's just, it's like air. It's kind of, it just is. I think we're trying to classify it as something that's familiar to us.
Maybe that's it.
It's like they pop out of the cradle, they got a cell phone in their hands, and they're off and running. I mean, this is,
That's true.
How old? They're like 12 and they have cell phones.
Well, I talked to my mother-in-law because I was trying to put up some information on using mobiles in school, and one of the, I asked her, because she teaches first grade, I said, how many kids do you have in first grade with cell phones? She said about 30 to 50%, depending on the year.
In first grade, we're talking about what, 7-year-olds?
And then she said second grade to fifth grade is where they, second grade is when they start. So by second grade, it's more like 50 to 75%. And then it gets bigger as they get to fifth grade. And so this is our you know,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm talking about. This is little kids, and they're having cell phones.
My kindergartner is playing on the iPad. She's playing on my iPhone. She's not making calls, but she's using the device.
Well, look at my 2-year-old. She has her own iPhone because I gave her my old one. And I actually set it up with Skype.
You're just ruining her, Danny.
Yeah, I know. I set it up with Skype, and I... So she actually can make calls to grandma when she's at home if she wants to.
Now, have you set it so she can only call grandma?
No.
The one thing I'm having a hard time with on the iPad with Madison is the in-app purchase stuff. I really want to... I think there's parenting stuff I can go in and turn that
off.
But then I can't do it, which is...
Yes,
so it's like, well,
that's where
I need to buy her own.
That's where you have your password and she... Can't.
Well, yeah, that does pop up.
The problem
is if I buy something, put in my password, and then immediately give it to her,
she
can do stuff.
You shouldn't do that.
Well, no, I know. But the other day she came over to me and she said, Daddy, look. And it was in-app purchase, buy now, okay. And I was like, no.
That brings me back to, I forgot, I haven't not heard too much of it lately, so I'm wondering if they took them down. It was the aquarium app.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember they
talked
about that on Windows Weekly.
And there was like $400 for a fish.
It's ridiculous.
And
I'm just waiting for that.
Yeah.
My wife's going to come, what's this $600 iTunes? I'm like, Matt? No. Hopefully, when iPad 2 comes out, I can give her this one, and then I'll have one that I can play with.
So now, here's my question, because you brought something up as you were talking. We were talking cell phones, and you immediately went to iPad.
Yep.
Is iPad a mobile device?
If you get the 3G version.
Okay. But is an
iPod Touch a mobile device?
I would say yes.
I think what makes it mobile?
Well,
obviously not connectivity.
Is it?
Connectivity doesn't make it mobile. The ability to carry it around?
That's true. So is a mobile just a cell phone? A mobile device just a cell phone? Or is a mobile device...
You know, it's tough because you have Wi-Fi. I think
that's the problem.
And I'm guessing that a higher percentage of my students have an iPod Touch than an iPhone. But for purposes of education, if it's Wi-Fi enabled...
Then it's mobile.
We're okay. It's mobile. They can... Anywhere on campus, it'll work.
Well,
if your school is lucky enough to have ubiquitous Wi-Fi.
But is it...
Ubiquitous meaning everywhere. Which we do, although I don't know what our capacity is.
So that brings me back to the question, is an iPad, tablet, are they considered mobile devices? They're meant to be mobile.
I mean, I would say that if you're buying a tablet and it's Wi-Fi only, you've limited your mobility. It's still a mobile device. You can still take it around with you. It still has connectivity.
You can still work on it.
You can still use it.
You don't have to be connected to do some things.
But... I think it's limited. It's not what I would consider in a traditional sense. You're not 100% mobile, certainly, because at some point you're not going to be connected to anything.
Because I was contemplating that as I was putting these. I'm looking for research on mobile, using mobile stuff, specifically Google stuff, in the classroom or out of the classroom, since it's mobile, for educational purposes. And I started thinking to myself, is an iPad part of that, or are we just talking cell phones? And so I kept myself limited to cell phones for now, but...
Well,
I guess
but
you
if
could
you have a, if you're talking Google and you're talking mobile and you have a 3G enabled iPad, I think you're there. What can't you do? You can do pretty much everything, right?
Okay, and then but where do we start drawing the line on mobile? Because when you think mobile devices, you think of cell phone size.
True.
Chrome OS.
But I think tablet and Chrome OS, if it's
Chrome
a 3G
OS
enabled,
netbook, is that a mobile device?
I think a 3G enabled netbook should be a mobile device. I mean, it's your. You have the ability to connect anytime, anywhere.
So, and that's where I think maybe
that you have 3G coverage.
Maybe that
you might want to expand your.
Well, the term I think needs to be fixed.
Oh, mobile device.
Because,
I mean, I probably would not count a 17-inch notebook with a 3G connection as a mobile device.
Okay.
Only because it's massively huge.
Well, but see, now we start drawing the lines, and where
well,
does that
you,
line
you
get drawn?
You got to draw a line somewhere. But you know what? If you want to carry around a 17-inch notebook, and that's your mobile device,
Which,
then more power to you.
Amazingly, I've been to several conferences where
people
whip
carry
out
them.
Their laptop, and it's a 17-inch monster. I swear, sometimes they're 20-inch.
You know what I want? I want a notebook the size of my 11-inch notebook here with a 14-inch screen.
Okay, I'm getting off topic here, but have you
that never happens.
Physically noticed or looked at the new Apple, I can't even, the Mac Airs, the 11-inch?
It's longer than it is. It's very much a 16x9 device, and it's tiny.
It's tiny.
Yeah.
But have you picked it up?
No.
It but is...
Super light, right?
No.
Heavy?
That thing's at least as heavy as our netbooks.
Okay. That's not if bad, not, though. It's not as heavy as a MacBook 13-inch, right?
No, of course not.
Have you messed around with the iPad at all? Have you picked one up? It's like 1.2 pounds or something like that? I mean, it's...
I wonder...
Have you played with it?
I'm
wondering
I've
in comparison
up,
to the Air, what it was.
I haven't physically, like, compared them, so...
I mean, the Air, to me... You know, for $1,000, I just can't see myself doing it because that you're in MacBook territory now.
So an 11.6-inch MacBook or 11.6-inch Mac Air is 2.3 pounds.
Pause. Mark it.
So the iPad is 1.5 for Wi-Fi only, 1.6 for 3G.
Pounds.
Pounds. And the MacBook Air... 11-inch, 11.6 is 2.3 pounds.
Okay, so it's double. A third more. 30%.
Yeah.
Okay. I could carry the iPad around all day if I could find a case that I really like, and I'm still struggling with that. I can't bring myself to spend $40 on that Apple case.
Now, here's the ultimate. A Mac Air with 3G connectivity.
I don't know about ultimate.
Well, I'm just saying.
Do they have a 13-inch Mac Air? What? It's 11 and.
Yeah, 13-inch is 2.9 pounds. So
I'd be curious.
Half a pound more.
I am not so much interested in the 11-inch Mac Air because I'm finding I have. I might be getting old, but I have screen issues. It's just hard to read the little tiny font.
1366 by 768 okay. native, which is the same as our 11.6s.
Okay, so the 13, I'd probably be interested in taking a look at.
That's on the 11-inch.
Oh, what's the 13?
13 is 1440 by 900.
Yeah, that's more my style,
which
is like the 13-inch.
Exactly the same as the 13.
Yeah.
But
so that, I think, for me would be a better size.
What is the Mac?
But what were we talking about? I got off track.
Well, I was just talking. We were
what's
talking
mobile
about
and what's not?
What's a mobile?
You know, I think you could probably draw a line with weight, connectivity, and those are probably would be the two. But really, it's whatever you're going to carry with you. Right?
Yeah.
If it's connected and you're carrying it with you, then that's your mobile device. I find that the iPhone, for the vast majority of stuff that I want to do when I'm out and about, is perfectly fine. I am really intrigued, and this rolls into what I posted, which is not Google related. Oh, damn, it is Android. The Nook Color, right? Barnes & Noble came out with a 7-inch tab. Basically, it's a 7-inch ebook reader is how they're marketing it, but it's full color. It's running Android 2.1. It is restricted in that it doesn't run full Android Marketplace and some other things, but there is a root kit out available for it. So for anybody that doesn't know what that means is you can actually install a full version of Android onto the device. But what's really compelling is it's $250. Pause.
Yeah, that's better.
You're back in?
Back in.
What was I saying? Nook. Oh, okay. Nook. So you can root it and you can install a full version of Android on it. And actually, Jim Klein posted a video. He's got a link up on his blog. So
there it is.
Yeah. And it's very compelling. I know a lot of people have said, including Steve Jobs, that 7 inches is not the right size for a tablet device. But
he also said stuff like that about things that they've come out with later
on. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they said they'd never do a tablet or something like that. Anyway, so the rumor is Apple's going to have like 3 version of iPads coming out end of January. So we'll see what they come out with. But at $250, I think we're getting around that magic $200 price point. Running a full version of Android, now we're getting kind of serious about capabilities. And, you know, I think 7 inches might be enough. Insert joke here. But I think the tablet form factor has a lot of possibilities. And I don't know that, you know, for a lot of what we do you need the keyboard? I mean, how much are we actually typing?
I understand what you're saying. Now, imagine a Mac Air is 12.8 inches wide by almost 3/4 of an inch thick.
It's all my fault. I got you interested in Apple, and now you won't stop.
And an iPad is 1/2 inch thick and 1.6 pounds. What if you had a convertible Mac Air that ran OS?
I don't see Apple ever doing a convertible tablet, and I'll tell you why. Because the hinge design is ugly.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't see Steve Jobs ever approving a hinge design. So there'd have to be something else.
I was also going to bring this up, though. You said that you would be interested in a Mac Air 13-inch.
Yeah.
Over a MacBook Pro.
See, use case. It all depends on use case. Full disclosure, I've never been a big fan of laptops. I just, you know.
They're a necessity item.
Yeah, I mean, my first job out of college, I got a laptop as my primary workstation, but I had a dock at work, and I just ran it off the dock with dual monitors, and then I had a setup at home where I ran external monitors. I've never been a big fan of either the laptop keyboard or the laptop monitor space. I like the mobility, but that's what I'm saying. With my iPhone, I feel like that I can be mobile and do what I need to do. But then for heavy lifting, and you know.
So it comes back to what's mobile and what's not. Right. And
but see, I'm an IT admin guy, so I need multiple screens open. I need a lot of screen real estate, and I've just become used to that over time.
Okay, but now what do our students need?
That's what I'm saying. I think they just need access primarily, and this is primarily they need access to the internet to look up information.
Which any...
Anything will do.
Phone capable of searching
any internet browser will do.
Yeah.
Any internet browser device will do. And secondarily, they should be able to create content. You know? But I think the question... I don't know. I mean, as a technology person, what's the question? What do we want our students to do? What capabilities do they need? You know, can you maintain a blog just using an iPhone?
Well, and that's just like I said. Right? One of my students who helps maintain the website, she doesn't want to go sit by the freshman when she's my TA. And so she actually maintains the website through her iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, you can update a blog through an email. You can use the WordPress app. You can whatever app you have on your phone, you can do it. So you can create content on your mobile device. But the question then is, what type of content are we teaching our students to create, or do we want them to create in our classes? Right? I mean, because exactly. Seriously, if they have to write a 5-page paper, the most efficient way to do that is type it.
Sit down and type it at a desktop, usually.
But if you want them to do a blog entry a day,
they can do that from their phone.
Yeah.
And for that matter, they don't even need a keyboard. They could actually talk and do a mini podcast.
They could do that. They could use Google Voice will do well.
Well, you can do transcription with the Google Voice, but you better be really good at enunciation.
Well, really? I mean, on an Android device, I've seen the speech recognition stuff.
Seeing
you don't have one to play with.
We're going all over the place, but Google Android speech recognition is just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And this is hearsay because I don't have one to play with. But everybody I've talked to, every blog post I've ever read about it, says that it's like next to perfect.
Right.
So what's wrong with Google Voice's transcription?
Probably using two different systems.
Now, if you could get Google Voice's transcription to be as good as Google or Android's, now you could use either. But yeah.
Right. So, I mean, that opens up the possibility that maybe we're not talking about... Maybe what we're looking at for technology is something that suits the old model of learning, and trying to shoehorn it into the old model of learning instead of really opening up what do we want students to be able to do now and what do they need to know how to do. You know, how are students going to be communicating in 10 years? What is that going to look like? Because don't forget, when I went to school, when you went to school, there was no email.
No.
Right? Well, nobody communicated through email. And if you wrote, and I think this is funny because I try to catch myself doing this. Sometimes I'll write like an 8-paragraph email.
And you're like, that's not
way too much, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the rules of email is you're supposed to be, you know, within the first 3 sentences, you should get your point across and be done.
Well, but this, I start thinking when the more you talk about what you're saying, I'm thinking in my head, differentiated learning, technology lends itself so greatly to letting kids learn at their own speed and their own skill level.
Yeah, definitely.
And not to mention their own motivation. Because they can use so many different tools to learn the same information that another kid could learn from, right?
Well, you're not telling them how to learn it.
It's kind of like a video game. They just get in and learn it. And one kid might learn it by going this direction. Another kid might learn it by going this direction.
Right. And so you and I grew up with video games, right? I mean, we're both gamers.
That's probably because why we're probably doing tech podcasts and stuff. It's because we started when we were young before anybody else, right?
I can tell you why I'm in technology, but anyway, that's another story for another time. But I think the fundamental thing that you learn from playing a video game is that you keep going until you get it right, right?
Failure is a learning
opportunity.
Exactly.
And you learn how to get through the levels, and you may have to run a level 40, 50 times.
And you might do it right almost, and then go back and do it 3 times and not even come close to getting the same thing.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So, and that kind of learning...
is not what's being taught in our schools.
No, it's a lot more like hands-on learning, right? Because let's say you do anything mechanical or you do anything hands-on, chances are...
You get a second chance.
The first time you go to build a wall, like the first time I ever built a wall, it was a little bit crooked. Right.
You learn what you should try looking at more the next time. Yes.
You know, like what types of nails to learn. You know that I didn't get the right type of nail, or you know, you learn that you should measure more times. Measure twice and cut once. That kind of thing. And you learn what 90 degrees is because you know if your corner is 80 degrees, your wall is not going to come out too straight. So it's just it's much more of a process. Instead of a
project-based learning, also,
yeah,
kind of the same thing.
You know, all these acronyms get thrown around,
yeah,
but learning is learning. And some of us, like I'm pretty good. I can read something and take a test on it and score pretty high, right? So that's just
memory. I'm the type where somebody can tell me something, I probably get it.
So you know, there's those
different learning styles,
but I think no matter who you are, I think doing something is probably the.
But what my point is, and I think this all comes back to the same thing, is technology allows all of those different learning styles to work.
Well,
right? Because
if you're the teacher that posts something that the students can read, presents some links that they can go explore on their own.
Maybe post videos or watch some
audio podcasts or something up there that they
Some little flash how-tos.
If you can present. Now, and the
The thing that I think is so awesome about the internet is chances are that stuff is already out there.
And you don't need to reinvent
the wheel. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. You may not even need to go find it. They you can let your students go find it.
And that's what we're talking about is what does that build? That builds lifelong learners because now they're learning how to go learn on their own instead of us spoon feeding them the information, right?
You know, we're definitely off topic and rambling. So, but I wanted to bring something up because we talked about Lifehacker, which is a site I think we both probably spend too much time on.
I'm there at least 3 times a day, yeah.
But think about what Lifehacker does. It brings in information, interesting articles about...
Aggregates.
Yeah, it's an aggregator. But you're getting information about how to do things that you can make your life better. In all aspects, all areas, how to hack your life. Some of those are interesting to you. Some of them are interesting to me. You can choose to follow the ones that you like, right?
Yeah.
Where is that for education? For students. Where can they go to a life hacker or a history hacker or a math hacker and explore the topic? And how do you do that within standardized frameworks and standardized testing? I mean, that's not how you learn in the real world.
And I understand that we need our students to be well-rounded, but I think there's something to be said for making sure that they have a path to follow, too.
Well, if anything I've learned from my daughter's time in Montessori is a lot of people have the misconception that Montessori is do whatever you want. It's not. It's kind of like free-for-all learning. And really, it's the opposite. Montessori is a highly structured environment in which
they get to choose
students get to choose the direction, and then they progress at their own level. And the teacher is there to facilitate them through that process and make sure that they are trying at the at their best level, that they are working. Like, my daughter has a tendency to stay on the easy stuff and not move to the next level even though she's ready. So the teacher's there to move her
just
along.
Just a little push, a little nudge, right. A little kick in the pants, whatever you want to call it.
She gets to choose within those different pathways, really, what she's going to do.
Well, and if we want to tie it back into stuff we were talking about earlier, it's kind of like the fitness stuff. I'm not motivated to go work out all the time, but if I have either peer pressure, peer guidance, peer support, whatever it takes, certain people need certain things.
Now,
the drill sergeant mentality, whatever.
Now throw that into, because I did go through basic training, which is more, I think, like public school than choosing to go and work out.
You are drilled to do this,
you have to do it. And so I think when you look at public education and the environment that students are in, they don't have a choice. I mean, they're here, and they have to learn all this stuff. And, you know, it's fine if you take that perspective and say, okay, students, you're here. This is what you're going to learn today. But how do you turn that around so that even though they have to be there and they have to be learning, do they really need to be learning? And I guess this is the whole public institution education debate. What should they be learning? Should they be learning stuff that interests them? Should they be learning the Common Core standards? Do they need to learn stuff that makes them well-rounded citizens? Do they need to know that volcanoes explode? I mean,
all of our states had different standards, and now we're talking about Common Core standards, and even the states don't even want to adopt Common Core standards because they each want to teach their own thing,
Called modified Common Core, right? Doesn't California have the extended Common Core or something like that?
They adopted partial, and then they're now doing their – yeah, whatever. I don't know. But anyhow, I
mean, what do you need to? I don't know. I took us way off topic.
We completely went from learning.
All you have to know from your time in education is how to read, how to write, and how to search. Now, I think
how
search
to
is the
learn,
most. In,
think for yourself.
Well, that's a big one,
too. Right? Common sense thinking. So, which is searching, right? Okay.
Access, analyze, and whatever.
I think we got off topic enough. We talked enough about tech.
That's okay. So anyway, Nook Color, if I get permission to buy one from the person who controls my finances, I'm going to get one and root it and play with it. But I do think tablets definitely have a place to play in education. So
they're
very exciting.
We'll call them Mobile Plus. How's that?
Okay. Whatever you want.
I'm coining the term tablets or Mobile Plus. You heard it here first.
It's probably the last place we're here.
Yeah, probably so. But
another short one. Are we done?
I think we're all wrapped up.
We've expired our show notes.
Our notes are done. So this is another episode, all finished up.
Sorry for the rant. Roll the music.
Music by Kevin.